We all live in the fantasy that things should go well and will go well, when in reality, things not working is normal. 2010, I started feeling weird pain in my bones, so I have rheumatoid arthritis. And I think that's true for any obstacle you hit in your life, any difficulty. It always feels like an obstruction, because for many people with disease, it is an inner isolation you experience. From your experience with that meditation, you become unafraid. And that's what makes courageous people, right? And strong, that's what builds resilience. As long as you're connected with others, it's a rich life.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Modern Buddhism podcast. And today I'm chatting to my friend Miri Renner. She's been studying, practicing and teaching meditation and Buddhism within the Kadampa Buddhist tradition for many years now. We explore many topics, especially how we can all deal with adversity in a much healthier, more empowering way.
And when you hit that magic spot, then it becomes very clear that this is actually your path, you could say, to happiness.
So Miri, thanks so much for dropping into the podcast today. Really looking forward to this conversation. I think it's going to be really helpful for so many people. So thanks so much for dropping in.
Oh, I'm so happy to be here. It's good to see you.
Yeah. You too, as always. What we're exploring today, I think, really in essence, is about how we transform adversity. So we all meet difficulties in our day. We all meet difficulties in our life and changes in how we experience our days and lives. But what we're looking at today is how you can transform adversity more and more over time. And really, I guess the starting point would be to explore a little bit the journey you've been on for quite some years now with chronic illness, and how really you kind of got to that place and how you're beginning to work with that. And then we can kind of explore it more and more.
So I've always been fit as a fiddle. And then in 2009 or 2010, I started feeling weird pain in my bones. So I have rheumatoid arthritis, which is an autoimmune disease, and it's for most people it's progressive and degenerative, and it attacks your joints. Your immune system attacks your joints, and what this disease does, as people can probably see when they observe my hands, is it deforms, it destroys your joints, and therefore it deforms your hands, your feet. It goes into the big bones as well, so currently hips, knees. It makes life difficult because you can't move as fluidly as you used to be able to. You have pain most of the time while it's active. It for most people, and definitely for myself, it meant a change in lifestyle. The initial quite natural response is that you're a bit shocked because you don't think of yourself as a sick person. And now suddenly you're beginning to recognize that you are a person who is sick. So it's very easy then to become quite depressed about the whole thing, you know, because it really cramps your style, basically. And you have to really reassess things. So when you're in pain and when you find your life, your window sort of like narrowing in terms of what you can do, it's quite natural to get unhappy about that. And for me, I was so grateful to have my meditation practice, and by that time had learned enough about how to transform adverse conditions, that I was actually able to pick my mind out of that ditch, you know. Most people struggle with that really, really badly. And there isn't really much of a system in place, or didn't used to be in place. Things may be changing a little bit now, where people get like the emotional support, or the support on the mental side of things that you need when you're dealing with a chronic disease. So personally, I feel like I was at a clear advantage simply because I have my meditation practice, because I knew what to do with it, you know. So on the one hand, it would be nice not to have it because you'd be able to do whatever you want to do again. And would also be nice not to be in pain intermittently or for longer periods of time. But on the flip side, because it's become part of my meditation practice, I've learned so much from it. I've learned so much from it with respect to my own ability to meditate, and also with respect to my ability to relate to others in a different way, to be more patient, more kind. That sometimes I think it's probably better I have it because I might end up, you know, getting a little bit more selfish again if it were completely gone, you know. So
It's very powerful that, because I think people listening who are probably going through a similar situation to you, they may have rheumatoid arthritis or they may just have some chronic illness in some way or another. I think for people who are going through that situation in their life and they don't have access to what you had access to before that, so you'd already been training meditation, you'd already been applying this timeless wisdom of Buddha's to your everyday life, you're kind of like more prepared for that in one sense. I don't think anyone can ever be prepared really well for that in normal life. It just hits you like a ton of bricks. But I know, because obviously we're good friends, I know that you were quite well prepared for that period of your life and you've worked with it in a really healthy way ever since. However, it has, and as you know, it's a challenge on a daily basis. But because you have that meditation practice, you can reframe everything within that context. I think for someone who's listening today and thinking, how do I deal with this ongoing chronic illness? It's like, okay, well, at least open the door a little bit to exploring. Maybe I can bring that meditation practice into my everyday life. So whatever I went through yesterday, whatever pain, discomfort, frustration, anger, anxiety I went through yesterday, I bring all of that into my daily meditation practice and start to use that as the fuel, as you say, to really grow.
You know, when you start and you hear about these amazing minds like patient acceptance, and you start applying them to your own situation. And I think the interesting thing is initially you like the idea of patient acceptance, or patients accepting acceptance being the mind that happily and fully accepts whatever occurs without and having given up the hope or even the wish for things to be any different than they are. And you start practicing and you feel, I'm practicing patience with that. But you actually, after a while of observing your mind, discover that you're actually still rejecting the idea of being sick. And your mind still perceives it to be an obstacle to your happiness. You know, that's why you don't want it. That's why you want it to disappear from your life again. And I think that's true for any obstacle you hit in your life, any difficulty. It always feels like an obstruction to being happy. And after a while of practicing, it dawns on you that precisely that is what will allow you to become even more happy than you could have been without it. Because you're beginning to really go for an authentic inner happiness. You no longer expect outer things to deliver your happiness. What I mean by that, normally we all rely on our body, for example, to play ball and allow us to engage with external things that bring us pleasant feelings and make us happy. And then you can't. And in fact, the thing is screaming at you and going like, I'm in pain, you know, don't move me, ideally. So what you begin to, where you get to as you're beginning to practice with it, is truly that recognition. It is having that's actually going to take me to a deeper and happier place. And it takes a good long while before your mind gives up the hope that things could be different and wishing for it to be different. And when you hit that magic spot, then it becomes very clear that this is actually your path, you could say, to happiness in a weird backwards way. And it's something you sort of have to experience for yourself. You have to go through for yourself. You can read about it and you can hear me saying it and it sounds exciting, but you have to sort of like do it yourself. But when you do it, it is really magical. And it will solve all your suffering around that. You know, your mental despair, all that will just dissolve from it. And when I think about how many people are struggling precisely with the despair arising out of their chronic pain or chronic sickness situation. I just wish everybody would get a chance to try and experience that.
And I guess what's great about your story is, you know, this is very real for you. This is like, you're going through this every day. And when you kind of get in a situation like that, and we can all get into situations like that, people can just go through very tough periods in their life and it's just ongoing. Every day they get up, there's another problem. It could be somebody at work, as you know yourself, you come from a corporate background, you just go through, even just from a day-to-day basis, like a constant stream of problems out there that feel overwhelming. But when you're talking about a chronic illness, it literally is an ever-present thing for you. And therefore, it's like, I guess at some point, it's very difficult to do this, but if we can gradually begin to really open our heart to that deeper level of acceptance that you're talking about. It's just really just accepting life as it is in this moment, because life can only ever be as it is this moment. Like, you know, like I often think that the difference between saying yes to what's happening, which is in essence patient acceptance, letting go of the resistance, and the difference between saying no. Like, you just even feel that mentally and emotionally. Yes, heart opens, I relax. No, heart tightens, I stiffen. And so if we could just, as you say, really engage with that practice of patient acceptance, like experientially, we're dissipating so much of the mental and emotional suffering, the overthinking, the anxiety that this situation is generating. It's not easy at the beginning, but as Geshe Kelsang would say very often, with familiarity, everything's easy. I'm just thinking for people on the podcast who are in that situation. You just start slowly, gently, and we begin to gradually transform that situation into a path to inner development, inner growth, which is incredibly empowering, given that these situations often just crush us.
The key thing is really allowing yourself to engage in a process, you know? So one of the practices I like to do a lot when I'm in pain, when pain is acute, or be that mental pain or physical pain, really, is I like to engage in taking and giving. And I can explain a little bit in a minute, maybe. The thing is, whenever you go into it, you sort of, your mind desperately grasps at quick results, you know, but it's a process that you go through. So you start practicing your meditation practice, whatever you may choose to do for yourself, where you begin to train in patience. And it is a process. It will take a little time. But every single meditation you do will change the way you experience it. And it will change the way you approach your illness. And it will relax your mind more and more as you go along. But it certainly is a process, you know. So one of the challenges I've come across when this first started and when I started practicing with it, just observing in my own mind, is that you hope, I'm going to practice this meditation practice so that I don't feel pain. You see what I mean? And it's quite a natural thing to want to do. But within that is already the not accepting of the pain being there, if you see what I mean. And for many people with chronic diseases, the pain is simply there. The question is, how do you relate to it in that moment? And it may or may not dissipate, you know? But how can you be happy and relaxed and peaceful in the face of, in this case, pain or whatever other adversity it might be? And that was an interesting sort of like inner journey to go through, to really allow yourself to accept that things may be like this for a while or for longer, but to really get better at being with it, you know, and growing from it.
Do you know what I'd love to, I'm just thinking for somebody listening, because we've opened that door. And I think you and I know that practice of taking and giving, taking by means of compassion, giving by means of love, is so powerful. Again, as you say, it is a process. It's not a flick a switch and everything changes. But I know for you, that's very much at your heart, that practice. And I just think it'd be good maybe if you could explain that a little bit and your experience of it a little bit.
What you do in the practice of taking and giving, let's take just one piece of pain. Let's say my hip. Yeah. Usually what your mind does, it focuses on the pain. And as with anything that you focus on, it becomes more intense. It begins to feel like your inner field of vision or your inner horizon, however you want to call it. And it preoccupies you, I think is the right expression. And the more preoccupied you become with it, the more your emotional suffering, you know, the more intense you're like, the more depressed you become, basically, or unhappy you become. So that's the normal tendency of the mind of most people. They will focus on that and they will focus on themselves and my pain. And and then you do all these things to relieve your pain, and you're sort of like all wrapped up in yourself, in your pain. And you miss to note that the more you focus on yourself and your pain, the worse it actually gets. It feels like I have to focus on it because it's there and because it's big. You don't necessarily realize it's big and there because you focus on it, right? So what happens in the practice of taking and giving is you're, for example, in the case of hip pain, you would simply allow yourself in the first step to open your heart to others who experience the same. So we say that the training in taking, as you said, is training in compassion, right? So you're taking your pain to basically use it as a window into the experience of other beings. So what I personally like to do is when I'm in pain, like my hip, I might focus on it and acknowledge how terrible it feels, become, you know, have my own experience, and then just ask myself the question, am I the only one who is experiencing that? You know, am I the only one? And what happens through that question is, you know, you reach out and you focus away from yourself. And even in that very first step, you can already feel like an opening of the heart. You can already feel a relaxing around the situation, and your heart goes out to others. And from that point, you can be as general or as specific as you wish to be. So, for example, you can think about other people you know go to the same rheumatologist that you go to. You can remember a few people sitting in the patient's waiting room, you know, and look into their hearts, into their experiences. You can look into the hearts of countless in countless countries, maybe even in war-torn areas where they don't even have medication to, you know, deal with these kind of diseases. You can be as specific or as generic as you wish. You can expand beyond specific hip pain, really open your heart to the experience of others. And, you know for yourself how unbearable it is. And there comes a point in that, like, open-hearted space, looking into the hearts of others, sort of like feeling what others feel, like a compassionate experience. There comes a point where you just wish everybody, it would just be wonderful if nobody had it, right? It would just be absolutely lovely if nobody had to experience this now or ever again or anything similar, right? So, and there are many different ways of practicing taking and giving. So I'm going to use one way of doing it. Geshe Kelsang suggests one option is to imagine that whatever your suffering is, it gathers all the suffering of others into that suffering. So like a magnet, basically, right? So I like to imagine that remembering my own hip pain, that my own pain in my hip is basically the magnet that pulls it out of the hips of everybody else. Yeah, it's I already have the pain anyway. I might as well use it to help others be free from pain. So I imagine that all that pain gathers, flows out of their minds, out of their experience, and I just take it away from them. I take it on because I've already got some pain. What's a little more, basically? Yeah. And then there comes a moment, you know, you're doing all this in your imagination, and everybody's imagination works a little bit differently. But there comes a point where you feel like, yeah, you know, everybody's free now. Everybody's, the last bit of suffering has been removed. And then you just allow yourself to pause in that beautiful, beautiful imagined reality vision of everybody being free from all pain, all of us. And you just abide in that result of your imagined action. And then, so that's the taking side of things. And if you wish, you can just at that point already, you know, stop your meditation and go like, may all the good energy I've created in my mind be the cause for everybody else never to experience this again. Basically dedicating your activity from this meditation to the well-being of all living beings in whichever way you wish. Or you can also, if you want to, add giving to it, imagining that your own heart transforms into a wish-fulfilling jewel and send out light into the hearts of all beings, fulfilling all their wishes and needs. You can be as specific or generic as you wish. And what you find happening is that just as you just begin to step away from yourself, you're grasping, your internal tightness around your own sickness begins to loosen. And because you're using your own pain as the method or the means to relieve others from them, even if it's just in your imagination, it doesn't matter. In that moment, your pain becomes meaningful. It has purpose and it has benefit and it does things, you know. From a Buddhist point of view, it's creating amazing karmic causes for peace and happiness for all living beings. So it's truly a meaningful and purposeful activity. And then, you know, sometimes what happens, it doesn't always happen, but sometimes it actually really reduces the pain in your hip. Suddenly it's gone. And you're like, oh. And in a weird way, then it's even a matter of like, oh, now it's gone. Now I don't have anything what to take with, you know? So you're a little bit like, oh. So yeah, it's a really amazing meditation. There's so many different ways you can practice it in, but whichever way you choose, it allows you to grow from it. It allows you, by virtue of starting out, with your own pain, to learn to be with your pain without pushing it away or without shying away from it, fully accepting that it's there and accepting what it feels like. And then it allows you to open your heart, build your compassion by going out to others. So you're combining like your resilience or your courage to endure difficult experiences and transform it into a wide open heart. And that's what makes courageous people, right? And strong. That's what builds resilience, because from your experience with that meditation, you become unafraid because you know that you will have something to do with whatever pain arises. I know that even if I end up in a wheelchair, so what? You know, my mind still functions. I can still do something with that. So, you become kind of fearless as well. And because your heart opens to others and you begin to more deeply feel compassion, you just become a much more beneficial person to whoever you encounter. Because I think anybody with a chronic illness has made that experience. You end up talking about yourself and your sickness quite a lot. And to some degree, that's normal because you meet friends, they see you limping and you can't just say like, never mind, right? I don't want to talk about it. It's a bit rude as well. So you sort of have to answer the question. But from your own side, you know, how much mental space do you want that to take up? And how much conversation space do you want to take up with that, with your friends and your families and whatnot? So if you've come to grips with it and you're truly interested, more interested in the experience of other people through your meditation practice, you become a much better friend and relative and general human being again to everybody else. You're no longer... Your person is no longer defined by your limitation, you know, and your difficulty.
So what happens is that often we're thinking, well, this is it. I'm just going to be stuck in this for the rest of my life. There's nothing I can do to transform it. But what's so both liberating and empowering in that, in the way that you're explaining that very beautifully, by the way, and thanks for that, is that when we're really engaging with this practice, what we're doing through developing this very powerful compassion in our heart that wishes to take away the suffering from others, and we engage in this powerful imagination, as you say, we're actually undermining the very basis of all our suffering, which is this intense grasping at this painful, stuck self. And then the unfortunate, excessive and obsessive self-concern that kicks in, that everyone who experiences suffering or pain knows, is when that mind starts to kick up this kind of self-centered orientation. We think, I need to think about my pain, but they simply can't function in a mind pervaded by compassion. And I think that's just such an empowering thing for someone who's thinking, what you're talking about today is exactly where I'm at, and I feel disempowered, I feel helpless, I feel hopeless. So thank you for that.
From my own experience, when you're like in your own little suffering zone, you're so preoccupied with yourself that you have no emotional range, really. And what then can happen is that negatively impacts your relationships with others as well. So now you're in physical pain, in mental pain anyway, because you don't want to have it. And then you're in a world of pain because the people around you are a little bit like, yeah, but, you know, it can't always be about you and your disease either, right? So once you open your heart, you become like, you're able to be with others again and support them. And what you discover is that, you know, when we are sort of like in the self-centered mode, which is quite a natural inner movement, let's call it that, mental movement, because our mind is used to focusing on ourselves. And certainly if there's pain to, in play, your mind naturally seems like, oh, it's a good idea to focus on this, right? So your mind focuses on you. It's a natural thing. So I'm not saying any one of us needs to be ashamed for becoming a bit self-centered when we are in this situation. But the thing is, that self-centered mind gives you the impression that your path to happiness is focusing on yourself. It feels like, just make sure, take care of yourself and all that you need. And yes, you have to take care of the body. I have to give it its medication. I have to make sure it gets a certain amount of sleep. But I don't need it to let it govern me as a person, if you see what I mean. But in those moments, your mind just thinks like the best way to be happy is to really focus on me. And also, to some degree, I caught myself, my mind, whatever, sort of like expecting and demanding from others that they would, you know, care about me as much as I care about me, you know, sort of thing. I think we all know that, right? It's like this, oh, can somebody please give me a hug kind of thing. So what your mind tells you in that moment is the best way to self-care is to be fully focused on yourself. And what you discover through the practice, for example, of taking and giving, in particular through the practice of taking and giving, is that it's precisely not thinking about yourself that is going to solve your emotional problem, that is going to allow you to move on and being there for others is what will bring you happiness. You know, there are so many stories of people who are in hospitals and they are, I don't know, terminally ill and they are having a lot of pain. And there are some people who are in their beds and they are all upset about it and grumpy and yell at people and upset about everything. And there's somebody who actually has the same disease, but is in a very good inner place and is able to be there for other people. And they are actually contradictorily happy in a situation that normally would assume you have to be unhappy in. And that person is able to be happy in the face of adversity and is also able to ease the mental suffering of others by actually being there for them, you know? And that's I think, something that's really worth aspiring to. Because like you said, and as Buddha very clearly taught, we all live in the fantasy that things should go well and will go well, when in reality, things not working is normal. So it would be really good if we were living in that context and from that perspective, because then we can be there for others and we will find that we ourselves are so well cared for by caring for others. It's really quite an amazing thing. But it's something you really have to allow yourself to discover for yourself. Because when you hear it, it can sound overwhelming. Yeah, it can sound like, well, I'm already have all this difficulty. Why should I think about other people's difficulty on top of it? I'm overwhelmed with what I'm dealing with. The thing is, you have to try it. You have to really try it. Allow yourself to really explore that. It's only in your imagination. So what is there to lose? You're maybe, you know, chair or bed bound anyway. So you might as well go for it. And what you discover is that through that, through really turning to others, you're helping yourself more than you could ever have in any way. And of course, you're moving along. You're cultivating exactly the minds from a Buddhist point of view that we are absolutely keen on. We want compassion. We want deep compassion, universal compassion for all living beings to progress on our path, even to enlightenment, if you wish, right? You need that mind. But even if you're not a Buddhist, if you just want to be happy, it's a mind to cultivate and not be afraid of. If you allow yourself to really explore that and sort of like dive into that in meditation, you will find that it's not overwhelming. And especially in the meditation on taking and giving, because it gives you an action to perform once you have developed that sense of compassion, because you become active, you take, you know, you're changing the world. You're beginning to change your own mind. You're beginning to change the world because you're part of this world. You change your mind, you begin to change your world, and you're beginning to influence other people in a different way.
There's no doubt you need to focus on your own health, as you know very well. There's no doubt you need to focus on your own well-being. There's no doubt you really need to take very good care of yourself, especially if you're in a difficult situation. But what we're really emphasizing, you explained beautifully there, is like when we're talking about that, what we mean is this excessive, obsessive self-concern that simply undermines our ability to be at peace and happy in a difficult situation. So just for those listening on the podcast, so we understand what we're talking about here is this mind that we call, within a Buddhist psychology context, the mind of self-cherishing. So a mind that thinks I'm important whilst at the same time neglecting others. And in a sense, this is kind of a self-centered orientation. We all have it. We all have the tendency for it. And as you said very beautifully, it's like we shouldn't feel guilt or shame for having these kind of thoughts or feelings. It's just an entirely natural response to when you feel you're lacking peace and happiness and when you're struggling with situations, which is essentially what we're all doing at different levels and in various times in our life. So we have that tendency within our heart, and it will hijack any difficult situation you're going through. If you're going through a tough time in your life, be sure that grasping mind will start to grasp at that experience, as you were explaining earlier on, and that self-cherishing will kick in and force you to obsess about yourself. And it convinces you, as you were saying, convinces you, if I do that, well, things are going to get better, and they never do. I often prefer to use the term self-sabotage. It's not self-cherishing, because often when people hear that, they think, what you mean, being kind to myself? It's not that. It's an excessive, obsessive self-concern that arises naturally in your heart when you're struggling with something. And just generally for us, that's all the time, because we're always struggling with something. But also it's self-sabotage, because it's not leading to you to where you want to be. If you start to connect with that experience in your heart, then this practice of taking and giving can become so liberating, so empowering, to the point, as you explain beautifully, then you realize actually it's through my love and through my compassion I'm becoming happier. I don't need to excessively, obsessively fixate on myself, because the more love and compassion I have in my heart towards others, the far deeper peace and happiness I find. And then we can bring that out into a world, as you said at the beginning, that's often struggling more than we are. There are so many people who are struggling far much more than we are. And it feels like we're the only ones struggling when that self-cherishing tendency hijacks your difficult situation. But actually, if we let that go and look around with compassionate eyes, we see so much suffering everywhere. And then our hearts move there. And if you move your mind off yourself, certainly in my experience, if you move your mind off yourself for even a few moments, there's such a deep relief. And so you have this power now. You're tapping into this superpower within you to really understand, like Geshe Kelsang says in the book, New Eight Steps to Happiness, love is the great protector. That's what will protect our mind, will protect us in those difficult times, especially when we're going through difficult periods in our life.
As you were talking, I was reminded that, when you're in a difficult situation, your world shrinks, you know, and very often, for many people, I think, and I've certainly had experiences of that as well, you begin to feel quite isolated in your experience. You know, there is literally the thought, nobody understands me, why I have to do this now. And which may well be true on a factual level, if you've never experienced the inability to zip up your trousers or brush your teeth without quietly screaming into the mirror. It's really hard to even imagine that kind of stuff, right? From that point of view, nobody understands it and might be judgy and things like that. But the suffering inner experience is feeling isolated. So when you are in that suffering mode, and if you allow your self-cherishing, as you said, or your self-centeredness, your mind to sort of like snap, catch onto that and grasp onto that, you're actually creating your experience of isolation from the world. We all want to feel connected with others. You know, one of our greatest fears, I would say, is to be lonely. And in those experiences, because your mind snaps around yourself and your pain, you're literally cutting off your ability in that moment to feel connected to others and to feel emotionally of feeling like held and connected. It literally shuts it down. And when you are allowing yourself to open your heart to really like sort of don't let your self-sabotaging, self-cherishing mind take over, and instead turn your mind actively towards others, you're keeping those gates open to feeling part of this world, to feeling connected. Because for many people with disease, it is an inner isolation you experience. You're, of course, always part of this world, right? There's always somebody asking how you're doing and all the rest of it, but you don't feel it. And it's because your mind snaps shut around your poor little sick self rather than being out with others. And the moment you do that, you reconnect and you're really discovering for yourself that loving others and being like cherishing others and being with them, feeling compassion for them is what enables precisely the experience you are longing for of the opposite of isolation, connection. You know, it allows you to relax back into your connections with others. And it is that mind which will make you happy. Whenever you're feeling love, whenever your heart is out with others authentically, your mind is peaceful, expansive, and happy. And not being with others mentally will isolate you in a very depressing sad, gray little inner world where nobody loves you. You know, that's what it feels like. And where you maybe even feel you're becoming more unlovable because now your hands look funny. Do you see what I mean? So if you allow yourself to use the situation to develop love and compassion, those concerns simply don't exist. And you feel connected. You feel exactly how you want to feel. You may not be moving as fast, but whatever, you know.
I just love that. You know, I think that's so, so powerful. And I personally think when you're in a difficult situation, getting familiar with that is so, so liberating, because you think, okay, I'm struggling today, but, you know, we're all struggling today in different ways. But actually, I can begin to tap into these inner resources. I can begin to live from a context of this pure potential within my heart. Yes, I'm struggling today. That's true. But also I'm beginning to develop a confidence, as you say, through that practice, that I have this pure potential. I can live from a peaceful mind and a good heart of love and compassion more and more. And these feelings of isolation and separation will gradually dissolve. As you say, in that mind, you know, you really feel the protection of a mind of love and compassion. And that's the one thing you can have control over. When you're losing control of your body, you're losing control of a situation at work, when you're losing control of anything out there, you can take control of your own internal experience and then bring that energy into the world and feel connected with others and actually begin to connect with others' pain and how you might be able to help them, which is so empowering.
As long as you're connected with others, it's a rich life, you know? And you can bring that to others. And, you know, we all have the potential to experience lasting peace because it's peace of mind. Happiness is a state of mind, as Geshe Kelsang says so nicely. It's a state of mind. So, and the mind, at the moment, we allow our mind to be controlled by external circumstances. But what you begin to learn through your meditation practice is that you can turn that around, that you own your inner state. Now, this is not to say that I'm always like super upbeat. It takes a while. It's a matter of familiarity and training. That's what meditation is for. Meditation means familiarizing your mind basically with peaceful, happy states of mind. You know, I like that very much. The Tibetan word for meditation, gom, means to familiarize. And I find that is a very helpful helpful definition of meditation, because what you're beginning to understand is that every time you meditate, you familiarize yourself with, you become better at maintaining a happy, open heart that's actually in line with your potential and with your actual nature of your mind, as you begin to discover as well, right? So once you've sort of shifted away from the expectation that the external world, and I'm going to include the body in that external world, is going to deliver happiness to you and should really, once you sort of step away from that and you realize that what delivers happiness is your state of mind, then you begin to be identified with your potential, and you take charge of your mind. And then once it's clicked, once you've really understood that happiness comes from a peaceful mind, comes from types of mind that in their core are peaceful, like love and compassion and expansive minds. Once that's clicked, if you want happiness, that's what you will be focusing on. That's what you put your mental energy into. Yeah. So it becomes about maintaining a peaceful mind rather than getting rid of every single bit of pain in your body. And rather you become acceptant of whatever appears in your internal experience, and you transform it into a peaceful mind because you understand that that's what's making you unhappy while you experience maybe some pain is your mind's resistance to it. And you begin to transform whatever experience of pain you have, because you've now understood it's your state of mind that needs to have priority if you want to experience lasting peace and happiness. It's pretty spectacular, really, to to discover that. I hope everybody gets a chance.
Yeah, and it's that thing is, like you say, prioritizing that your state of mind is really where we need to give more energy. So it's not that we don't give energy to the external aspects of our life. Of course, we have to. We need to, you know, have our job and take care of our family. We need to go about our life and the external aspects of our life. But I think a lot of the challenge that people have nowadays, and especially when you're struggling. I mean, that's when it happens the most, I think, sometimes, is we deprioritize this other aspect of our life, which is this inner development, this inner growth. Sometimes when you're in that space, it's the last thing you think about is turning in, because you're so in pain, you're so identified with that pain. And because the mind grasps that self-identification at that moment, you think, there's nothing I can do to change this. So the last thing I'm going to do is look at this. I just want to distract myself from this. I want to keep myself busy. I want to keep myself moving. I want to keep myself doing. And of course, what happens is you create this imbalance. You have this external development that you're obsessed about or focused on or just constantly engaged with or distracted and busy, keeping ourselves busy to keep ourselves away from focusing on the one thing that if we turned in and began to focus on, we'd actually begin to resolve more and more. But when the mind is really going out a lot, then you create this imbalance where you feel this inner aspect of your life, which we all have, this spiritual dimension of our being, begins to deteriorate more and more. So I love what you're saying there is, if we start to prioritize, like reprioritize your life, yeah, you need to pay attention to the external aspects of your life, your material developments and so forth. But if we pay attention to this inner development, this spiritual development, we create this healthy middle way between both that supports us. That's the key. It supports us in dealing with adversity. And the more we can do that, more and more we discover, I have so much more within me. And now I have a whole way of training in everyday life. I get up, I meditate, I bring that experience into my day in life. I apply that wisdom to the challenges I meet in my day, in my life, in my body. Now I'm feeling actually quite encouraged, inspired, energized to live a truly happy life because I've got my life in balance in this way. And I think a lot of it is simply for people nowadays, especially when they're struggling, we deprioritize the one thing that would help us so much, building really exceptional levels of mental and emotional well-being and resilience, inner well-being. So I like the way you say that, because it's like an encouragement to everyone listening today. Wherever you're at, don't worry. There is a way to bring that balance into your life. And of course, in your experience, you very much have had to do that as a necessity. I mean, it wasn't like that you weren't training in this before, but now it's like, yeah, and I really need to double down on that now.
Yeah. And you have a good point there about distraction, because that's basically, it's the desire to be distracted from it arises from not accepting it, right? And then you distract yourself from it. And because you're shifting your attention away from it for a short period of time, that really seems to work. And you're like, yeah, that works, more Netflix, you know? But the thing is, you're not actually fundamentally changing anything about your ability to deal with anything. So it is really counterproductive to run away from your inner experiences, basically. And it is such a wonderful opportunity, every single moment of difficulty, to lean into it rather than trying to lean away from it and to grow from it. And every time you go for distraction, it will simply set you up for the same or slightly different suffering later, and you haven't progressed at all. So having the opportunity to be challenged every day like this with a chronic thing really begins to allow you to grow even faster than people without any problems really could. I mean, honestly, I've been practicing meditation for a long time, but it's fair to say that it took off when I started having like real problems, you know, not just first world problems, but like actual problems. I found that actually quite enriching. And it sounds a bit weird maybe, but it's true. And every time I chose distraction, it seems a good idea in the moment, but it never is. And it's really worthwhile going in, nurturing your potential. So if you are lucky and you go through a period without any problems, please go and nurture that potential. But definitely in the context of what we are talking about here, when you're having a difficult time, don't run away from it. Nurture your potential. And you will find that there's so much growth to be had in not running away, but sitting with it and looking at it and working with it. And that's, by the way, not just physical pain, also things like mental, what we would call like mental pains, like anxieties and whatnot. Especially with anxiety, it's a very strong tendency I find in my own mind to try and distract myself from it, to not having to experience anxiety, because it feels very unpleasant in the mind, right? And for me, that's sort of where you can also bring in taking and giving to give you a little bit of a sense of how to deal with that. So many years ago, you and I, we've known each other for a long time. We spent a lot of time flying around for work at some point. And I never had any issues with flying. I would just get on a plane and, you know, the plane could do whatever it wanted to and there was no anxiety. And then one day that changed from one minute to the other. I was sitting on the plane, as most people know, you know, your hands get sweaty and your heart starts beating faster. And I was experiencing full-on anxiety at takeoff and landing. And, you know, heavens forbid the thing would wobble in the air. So there you are. And your instinct tells you switch on the television and watch some whatever movie is out at that time to distract yourself from it. But I think we also all know as you do that, there's a part of your mind that is still like holding, grabbing the armrests. And you're still freaking out, right? So at some point I realized maybe this is the moment to apply taking and giving. So because, you know, when you sit there, once you stop obsessing about your own anxiety and once you stop worrying about being worried, it doesn't really take much mental acrobatics to understand, am I the only one on this plane who is afraid? You know, you don't even have to look around to know that there will be people like raw knuckling, you know, the armrests like you are doing and other people, you know, being stressed and maybe even children having ears pop, not knowing what's happening. So, and you begin to develop compassion for everybody else on that plane, including people who maybe not be anxious, but who are getting upset because the child is screaming, you know, everybody's experiencing mental unrest. And then you can just imagine that all that anxiety on that plane from every single person, in this case, gathers as dark smoke. You breathe it in and you breathe out calm and happiness to everyone. So you're experiencing your own anxiety. It's there. You're using it as the spring off point or jump off point into the experience of others. You're practicing taking and giving with respect to the fear and peace of mind for everyone. And suddenly you notice that your anxiety has drastically reduced and your heart is beginning to be open and more relaxed. You solved your own problem of your own difficulty in that moment and you have grown from it. And you're no longer afraid of being afraid again in the future. Because you know that even if you find yourself on a subway train getting claustrophobic, there is nothing to be afraid of in claustrophobia. You can do something with it because you are not the only one experiencing it. So you can go straight into taking and giving wherever you are. And you have something to do with your difficulty. And you grow from it. Had you not done that, if you were just sitting there watching movies, you would just walk out like this on the other end, shaking. And nothing would have changed in your ability to be with people. Or in your ability to deal with difficulty at all. It would have been a very stressful flight. And if you can use the practice of taking and giving to basically leaning into your fear rather than trying to, you know, get away from it, makes a world of difference.
I think everything we've explored today, there's so much in there for everyone to begin to start where they're at, begin to grow this kind of inner resilience, this inner peace, this inner joy, even in the face of adversity. Again, we have to keep emphasizing this gradually over time. As you know, this is a lifelong journey, really. And yes, it improves over time, but you just have to be really at peace with and very patient with yourself. And as you put earlier on, patient with the process. It is a process. It is a journey. But we can all begin today with all of the areas we touch on in this podcast. There's so much of this that people can begin to internalize. And as you say very beautifully today, it's like even when you're in an ongoing chronic illness or even a chronic pain, we can begin to work with these situations. But you know what I was thinking just to conclude today's episode? If there's one piece of advice from your heart that you'd like to share with somebody today in that situation, what would that piece of advice be?
Don't despair. And don't disappear into it. Use it as a window into the hearts of others and open your heart and be in life, be in the world and cultivate inner peace from that experience rather than despite that experience. Makes a huge difference.
Very beautiful. my friend, Marie.
Oh, Adam, it was lovely to see you.
You too. Thanks so much for dropping in. I really appreciate this.
Thank you.
And I look forward to us catching up again very soon, whether there's a microphone in front of us or not.
Yay, tea.
Thanks, my friend.
Thank you.
Hey, everyone, just a quick one. We'd love to get these podcasts to more and more people over time so that many people can benefit from these conversations. So to help us get there eventually, and also if you think it might be helpful to somebody today, maybe you'd like or share this episode. Also, to help us grow this channel over time, please feel free to subscribe.